honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by Provident Payments, one of the fastest-growing payment consultants in America. Connect today at providentpayments.com.
People of the Philippines, I have returned.
General Douglas MacArthur uttered those words 79 years ago this week on October 20th, 1944, and we've heard from three men already who were there that day as he waded onto the island of Leyte. But we remember the return in large part because of the pledge MacArthur had made 2.5 years earlier after fleeing Corregidor, where American forces had been under attack by the Japanese for months. William Sanchez had been a promising boxer in Southern California, even offered a scholarship by UCLA. He would end up on the USS Missouri with MacArthur in Tokyo Bay on September 2, 1945, when Japan's unconditional surrender was finalized. But what he endured in the years in between was almost unthinkable.
So many things happen, and so many things happen fast, that you really didn't have time to think. You just acted accordingly, you know, according to the situation. I was right on Corregidor, right on the rock.
Uh-huh. And people who know some of that history know that after the Japanese attack, eventually when the Bataan Peninsula fell and there was the death march, and they've heard about MacArthur leaving, and when MacArthur left, you were one who stayed behind.
That's right. We were left behind. Not by choice, but it happened.
How did you feel about that at the time?
Not too good. The treatment wasn't very good at all.
And how about your supplies? Did you guys have the normal supplies you should have had?
No, not quite. We had to do without a lot of things, but we managed.
And as the Bataan Death March is happening across the way in April of 1942, are you guys getting updates? Are you aware of what's happening there?
We were pretty well up to date, yes. We knew what was happening at most posts. It was a difficult time for us.
How much time did you spend in the Malinta Tunnel?
Few months.
Yeah.
It was our only place we could sort of do our own thing. Those were hard days.
Yeah, as I try to imagine myself in your shoes.
Yeah.
And it seems like that's a pretty unique place to be, where you'd be pretty isolated and cut off from the rest of the world.
That's about true. Yes. You had no contact with the outside world.
And did you have a sense that at some point your capture was unavoidable?
Well, we knew it was going to happen, so we just went along with it. We had a very, very hard time. We had no say in the matter.
And after December 7th, we've got the rest of December and January and February and March and April. How often during that time were the Japanese bombing where you were and strafing Corregidor where you were?
They came repeatedly. They had no opposition whatsoever, so they came at will.
So that was just something you had to get used to?
That's it. You had to accept. You don't get used to it, but you have to accept it. It was a tough life. It was rough.
What do you remember about Cinco de Mayo in 1942?
Nothing but bad things. Everything that happened was bad.
That was the day they invaded Corregidor.
Right.
And at that point, they knew you had experience with machine guns, so they sent you out to a machine gun post?
Yes, I was at a machine gun post on the defense side. Life wasn't easy. It just, one bad thing after another would happen.
One of the reasons you've touched so many lives and inspired so many people is that you've made it through all this and you've survived all this.
That's it. I was able to endure, and I try to make things less difficult.
How did you do that?
Well, you roll with the punches and do the best you can. You accept it.
So on May 5th, after months of shelling, bombing, strafing, the Japanese are finally on your island.
That's it.
And they actually knocked out your machine gun post, right?
They did. They overwhelmed us. Their superiority was something that we couldn't endure.
But even though they hit your position, you weren't wounded and none of the men with you were?
We had some wounded, but it could have been worse.
And you went back to the tunnel?
Yes, sir. You had no freedom at all.
Well, and that was really going to be the case once the decision was made to surrender.
That's it. Actually, we didn't know what would happen at the surrender, but we found out real soon that things weren't going to be pleasant.
Well, and I want to hear about that. But before we get to that, let me ask you a question that is relevant today at age 102 and a half, because I'm sure that every once in a while you see the flag, your flag,
yes,
the Stars and Stripes. What do you think about when you see that flag?
You take a lot of pride in that.
And there was a flag, a big giant flag, flying above your post on Corregidor?
Yes.
And I understand you were asked to take that flag down so the Japanese wouldn't get it?
Yes. We tried to preserve the flag itself so that it wouldn't fall into Japanese hands. We took the flag down and we hit it.
And it had been shot up a little bit, I guess, right?
It had a few shell shots on it, yes, quite a bit.
So did someone tell you to tear it into little pieces, or was that your idea?
No, it came about. I wouldn't say it was my idea, but it was the only thing we could think of. We tore it into little pieces so that it wouldn't fall into enemy hands. Once it was in little pieces, we just kept it. They wanted the flag in toto, and they didn't have the chance to get it.
I'm just imagining, you know, obviously you're someone who signed up to defend your country, and now you're overseas in a very difficult situation defending your country, and now you're having to take apart the emblem of your country. Was that an emotional experience?
Yes, it was. But you had to accept it, and that's what we did.
Were there some tears during that process?
Yes, there was. Quite a few.
I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, but I believe that I heard you mention before or read about it, that you made a statement at the time as you're completing this task that you never asked for, that the situation presented to you, about hoping no one else ever had to do that, what you were doing.
That's right. It was a very bad experience.
And I'm not trying to make you dwell in a bad experience. It's for us to understand what you went through helps us appreciate more what we have, what you and so many others paid for.
Yes. Yes, it was a very difficult time for us.
In holding off the enemy there for 5 months after the attacks that brought America into the war, those undersupplied but courageous American forces bought enough time for the U.S. to regroup with a new base of operations in Australia. That would prove pretty important through the rest of the war, but it all came at a heavy cost. Like the thousands who survived the Bataan Death March a month earlier, those captured on Corregidor would spend the next 3-plus years in captivity. Do you remember, Mr. Sanchez, what that felt like when you heard that the general had reluctantly ordered all 11,000 troops on Corregidor, all the Filipinos and all the Americans like you, to surrender?
Well, you can't forget that. You knew you were going to lose your freedom, so it was a hard thing to accept.
Did you ever think you were going to lose your life?
Yes, all the time. At any time, you figured this might be your last moment.
And when that surrender happened, you probably had no idea what to expect from the Japanese, right?
Right. We had no idea what was going to happen to us.
What did happen to you? What was the first thing they had you do?
Most of it was bad treatment and things that you don't really expect, but you have to endure.
And you were still a very young man.
I was a very young kid, yes.
You're in your early 20s. At this point, you're 23. Do you think that some of what you'd already endured in your life prepared you to handle that?
Yes. It was a good experience to be able to handle what was coming. And you don't wish it on other people.
So now you're a prisoner.
Yes.
And you have no idea how long you're going to be a prisoner.
That's the worst part.
So how did you face that? What gave you the strength or the hope to endure, to persist, to persevere?
Well, you never lose hope. You always think something better is going to happen. And you go on that basis. Things can't get worse.
But for you, as I understand your story, after you're a prisoner, they did get worse. The Japanese gave you a real brutal task.
The Japanese were real bad. It's something we had to learn to endure.
And they made you pile up all the bodies of the Americans and Filipinos who've been killed there?
Yes. They made us take care of all the bodies and everything, and we thought it would never end.
And then what did they do with those bodies that they forced you to gather?
Oh, they just piled them up, carted them up, and set fire to it. They weren't very kind. And all in all, it was a very bad experience. But it was something that had to be endured.
And so this is 1942. And as I said, you didn't know how long, but it was going to be a long time.
Yes.
Until you tasted freedom again.
Yes. It was a very difficult time at the time.
Can you help us understand what life in captivity was like and what some of the things you had to face and endure were?
It is very difficult to try to explain what we endured. It's unbelievable, but it happened.
Is it okay if I ask you a few questions about some of it?
Yes.
And I realize that this is something you had to survive one day at a time for more than 3 years.
You never knew what was going to happen the next day. From day to day, you learn to live life.
Were there some people that you were with that helped you?
We all helped each other. There was many bad things we had to learn to endure, and we all helped each other.
You know, one thing that I think most people listening can identify with, or maybe can get a frame of reference from, since we all have to eat to survive, maybe people would be interested to hear what your menu consisted of as a prisoner of war.
Leftovers. What they didn't eat, they would feed us.
Is it fair to say that you ended up eating some things you never thought you'd eat?
That is true. It was a rough time in life that you don't even like to think about.
And we talked about you being a boxer, a good enough boxer that the Bruins wanted to give you a scholarship for it.
That's right.
So you're in pretty good physical shape before this happens.
Very good shape.
Uh-huh.
But that dwindled fast.
Yeah. So how much do you think you weighed before the war?
Oh, maybe 135 pounds or something. And we were down to about 100.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very difficult life overall and the way things happened.
And, you know, people today, some of the reference points they have to this experience, maybe one of the most well-known would be your friend Louis Zamperini, and they've seen the movie Unbroken, or they've read that book by Laura Hillenbrand.
Yes.
Or read Louis' book.
Louis Zamperini happened to be in my camp.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew real well what he wrote about.
So when he wrote about being tortured?
Yes.
You experienced similar things?
Well, life itself was a torture. And it's just something you had to learn to endure.
How often did you think about your brother or your sister or your cousins, your family back here?
Quite often you think of what life is like to be with your family. Yes.
I've had a lot of ex-prisoners of war give me different perspectives on some of the things they did in captivity to focus their minds or to remain hopeful. Some guys would daydream about all the things they were going to eat when they got out or the business they were going to start.
You always think about that, what you're going to eat when you get out. That's the primary thought.
So what was that for you? Was there something you were really looking forward to?
No, I just learned to accept things as they were and hope for something better.
I don't ask this to be salacious or melodramatic or anything like that, but just so we understand what it was really like. What were some of the most challenging things or circumstances that your Japanese captors made you endure?
Well, first, we didn't eat enough. We were always hungry. So they knew how what our limit were and everything, and things were difficult. It's hard to accept some of the things we had to endure.
And I'm sure it was different at different times in different camps, but could you give us an example of like what a daily ration might be that they gave you to eat or drink?
It would vary. Sometimes we would eat good. Sometimes we wouldn't eat at all. So it would vary. It's nothing that would be steady. You just learn to accept things as they are for the moment. It's a very, very good feeling to think that you're going to have freedom again. Just the thought of it makes it exceptional. You always think the best is going to happen. You never think of the worst. It's always the best.
Where were you, and can you help me understand what it was like when that taste of freedom finally showed up again?
Oh, exhilarating. I was a prisoner in a prison camp when they finally decided to surrender. And boy, that was a great day.
Before you came home, back to California, you actually ended up in a very unique place on September 2nd, 1945, 2.5 weeks or so after the Japanese declared their intent to surrender. They actually had some dignitaries that came aboard the USS Missouri in Tokyo Bay and signed the instruments of surrender.
Yes.
And we've seen the pictures. General MacArthur was there, and Admiral Nimitz was there, and this skinny General Wainwright was there.
All the big shots were there, yes. That was a happy day for all of us.
Well, and somebody else was there.
MacArthur.
How about Sanchez?
Yeah. I was right in the middle of things. But we were so grateful just to be free.
How grateful are we to be free? It's so easy to take our freedom for granted. But perhaps the stories we've heard today have added a little to your perspective. And the next time you see or hear a reference to MacArthur's triumphant fulfillment of his I Shall Return pledge, maybe you'll remember William Sanchez and others who endured captivity. You'll remember Dave Wall and Joe Garabedian and the rest of those who paid a real price for the liberation of the Philippines and the ultimate victory for the Allies in World War II. And maybe, just maybe, it'll take all of us back to those four words we conclude this program with each and every week. Freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by Provident Payments. Give your business the edge only their personalized service can deliver at providentpayments.com.